Hello, and welcome to MoCA. My name is Anthony McSpadden. It's my pleasure to join you as you tour the galleries in one of Hampton Roads' foremost institutions devoted to contemporary art. At any point during the audio walk, you can pause the recording and restart when you're ready to continue. Directions for using the iPod are on the back of the device. Press pause until you're ready to enter the main gallery, and then press the play button once you enter the doors. Think about the last time you participated in a conversation about race, gender identity, the death penalty, or the Affordable Care Act. Did you participate actively or remove yourself from the discussion? Did you care one way or the other? Today, these civic-minded conversations happen in homes, schools, online. They're everywhere. Do you know what the top social issues on Twitter are for Americans? Better transportation, gender equality, climate change, effective government, freedom from discrimination, and better job opportunities, just to name a few. But do you know what's not on this list? Surprisingly, it's an issue that the Center for Disease Control has labeled one of the largest illnesses affecting one in four adults each year in the United States alone. It can impact all people, regardless of social or economic status, race, or religion. And believe it or not, roughly 60% will not seek treatment. You may think heart disease or cancer, but it's actually mental health. Now, why did that not seem obvious? Is it because the topic is so taboo that people shy away from sharing, anguishing in silence with this illness, or secreting away those known to be afflicted? Not here. Not in these galleries. Here, art challenges secrecy and hopes to kindle an open conversation that promotes awareness and supports change. Organized by Pittsburgh's Society for Contemporary Craft, Mindful is a socially engaged art experience. Featuring 40 works created by 14 contemporary artists, Mindful examines creative responses to mental health conditions through the inclusion of artworks made by artists who have been diagnosed with or affected by mental illness. It's our hope at MoCA to share in the effort to motivate dialogue, break down societal stigmas, and offer an opportunity to encounter and understand mental health through the lens of contemporary art. Let's begin by looking at the work of artist and philanthropist Caledonia Curry, also known as Swoon. To the right as you entered is an immense wall hanging with what appears to be three women huddled together. Stained with coffee and hand-painted, this large-scale block print is the work of Brooklyn-based artist Swoon. Originally known for her street art of pasted prints on New York City buildings, Swoon went on to create a nonprofit organization devoted to community revitalization in areas like Louisiana and Haiti. Her work is often considered a blend of art and activism, which we see here in the piece titled Memento Mori. Let's examine the work, starting at the top. A skeletal figure of an elderly woman encircles her arms around a middle-aged woman holding a child on her hip. Beneath these figures is a fetus still in the womb, visually and physically connected to the three above by way of swirling bold lines. Is the aged figure at the apex of this scene with oxygen tubes in her nose emblematic of a family matriarch? Is she providing safety, or is she a haunting presence? More significantly, is this a portrait of the artist in her mother's arms, or is the emaciated woman her mother? Surrounding the scene are skeletons with screaming faces, as well as prickly plants, snakes, toothy jaws, and skulls hiding in layers at the edges. The title provides yet another clue, a Latin expression reminding us that we will all perish. Swoon offered a soulful glimpse into her childhood in a 2014 opinion article for CNN, sharing her experiences with her mother's mental illness, addiction, and suicidal tendencies. Prior to writing the article, she had learned how mental illness often stemmed from childhood trauma. In this, Swoon found her way towards forgiving her mother, offering that she was able to grieve for the life her mother endured prior to her birth. Once the artist could find compassion, her mother opened up about childhood sexual and physical abuses that led to her drinking, beginning at the age of 14. It was then Swoon realized that nothing could inflict greater damage than her mother's internal suffering. It cemented her belief that, in her words, Punishing those already suffering would never foster the kind of change we all so desperately need these individuals to make. Before us is an homage to the memory of her mother, recognizing the love and anguish of life, the interconnectedness of generations, and the need for compassion. Nearby is a series of images with birds in flight. Head over to the work as I share more with you. Artist Lynn Gottlieb views light as a connection between the celestial heavens above and the soul's energy within. Just as light shows more within and around us, so too does art. Gottlieb views these connections as imperatives in her work. Even the use of charcoal to render the birds, one of the oldest art-making mediums used by humans, to the fiber optics used in her work, Gottlieb is bridging time and ideas. She's also someone who believes in the transformative powers of art. Having lost her business partner and father of three sons to suicide, Gottlieb used art as a means for coming to terms with life's journey. She began to understand her connection with light, both literally and symbolically, as well as her need to make. Consider the work in front of you. What do you notice? Go beyond describing the energy and consider how you feel as you view the work. Try pausing the audio walk so that you might sit and reflect on the work, and then press play to continue. How has your breathing changed? Are you calm? Not sure? Try looking again, giving yourself time to notice changes in your body. The work before you, in flight, has been shown to have interesting psychological effects for the viewer. Researchers found that the same wavelength of light used in this work of art is also used in light therapy to reduce stress and act as a calming agent. With this understanding of how light features in her work, Gottlieb is advancing her premise that art should serve to transform the world into a better place, to relieve suffering. Her work is the embodiment of this belief, connecting her art to her hopes for humanity. Turning around and looking opposite Lynn Gottlieb's work, look to the left and right of the monitor to view the work of Sophia Jung Am Park. Made from copper and painted, these sculptural elements appear like elements taken directly from nature. And yet, if you look closely, these branches are intertwined with the human form, curving alongside and extending beyond the line of the figure. These sculpted branches are a metaphor for human adaptation to the difficulties of life. Have you ever seen a tree's root system overtaking a sidewalk or branches curling through chain-link fences? It's nature's ability to adapt, to grow, to survive that is truly admirable. A bonsai tree may be clipped and bound by wire, impeding its freedom, but it survives and is a thing of beauty. I would be remiss in not asking you to consider a time when you needed to adapt to life's twists and turns, to curl your branches around difficulties. How did you overcome these obstacles? What coping mechanisms do you have, and how did you acquire them? Just as you would care for your body with vitamins and exercise, the mind must be nourished as well. Recognizing and using these coping mechanisms, as well as finding comfort and connectedness, is all a part of mental wellness. Moving to our next stop, two suitcases are in the corner of the room. Walk closer to view the contents of the opened suitcase. What do you notice? How is the figure placed? What does the lack of color suggest to you? French for ready to wear, the skin within the suitcase is enigmatic. Is this new skin something that someone is preparing to wear to provide the outside world with some new concept of who they are? Or is this the cast-off skin of who they once were? Regardless, what we can determine is that this is a fragile moment of transition. Much like the skin of an insect or reptile, it may have been shed and packed away, only to be revealed to us in a vulnerable moment of stillness. This scene, created by artist Alison Saar, might also remind you of the concept of a thick skin, one that is impenetrable to the outside world's ridicule or slander. But this is not thick. It's thin, delicate, and frail. What might this say about the wearer or the world in which they live? Turning now to the table in the center of the gallery, look at each place setting. What do you see laid out on each plate? Could we consider this a feast of pharmaceuticals? In this piece, Consumption, artist Ian Thomas examines the relationship of medicines to the concept of mental wellness. Really, what does it mean to be normal? And is there really a normal to achieve? What happens when the drugs we take consume us and create new versions of ourselves? What is the right concoction? As with many of the artists in Mindful, Thomas's work is designed to question concepts and start us thinking. For there to be a change of any kind, we must first consider what we know and seek to learn more about what we do not. In a day when many are questioning the abundance of prescribed medication, as well as whether there are alternative methods of treating mental health, it's important to consider if drugs are helping or creating more problems. Our final stop in Mindful is at the work of Grace Kubilius. Look for the life-sized mannequins wrapped in fabric. Before I share more, take a look at the materials that they're wrapped in, as well as how the clothing is fitted. What is covered, and what remains exposed? How might it feel to wear either of these garments? It is in this last question that the artist Grace Kubilius seeks to understand the architecture and emotion of wearable objects. She explores gender, identity, trauma, ugliness, and objectification in her art. For her, the art of creation is also a therapeutic journey. It's on this last concept that we leave Mindful. As Kubilius's art is a cathartic outlet for her and serves as a model for our own search for understanding, reflection, and connectedness. The artists of Mindful have shed light on a taboo topic, offering varying insights and points of consideration. As mentioned at the start of our walk, it was the goal of this exhibition to begin a dialogue about mental health, promoting awareness, and using art as a lens for helping the community. You may wish to pause the audio walk to look further in this exhibit or head to the next stop. When you're ready, find the exhibit of Nevet Yitzhak's work and press play to resume the audio walk. A notable video and installation artist, as well as a cultural researcher and composer, Israeli artist Nevet Yitzhak uses digital animation based on contemporary Afghan rug patterns to explore representations of war and violence within a traditional craft. In 1979, Soviet troops invaded Afghanistan, bringing weaponry, violence, and bloodshed to the country. Afterwards, a dramatic shift in the traditional art of rug weaving occurred. Modern-day helicopters, tanks, and maps made their way into the ornamental designs of the Afghan rug, eventually becoming sought-after collectibles in the West. Here, Yitzhak lifts the images from the rugs and digitally manipulates them, similar to computer war games. The war rugs appear to come to life with sounds of combat combined with animated conflict simulations. Take a moment to view the animations, and when you're ready, press play and head into the next exhibit just outside this gallery, titled New Waves. Welcome to New Waves 2017, the Virginia Museum of Contemporary Art's 22nd juried exhibition, supporting contemporary artists from our region. This year's juror was Ken Harmon, San Francisco-based curator and owner of two galleries, Hashimoto Contemporary and Spoke Art. Previously, Harmon was the online editor for High Fructose Magazine, where his writings appeared in multiple print and online features. His most recent art book, the Wes Anderson collection, Bad Dads, was published by Abrams Books in 2016. The works of art you see here were selected by Harmon from over 300 artist submissions. He was tasked with the difficult responsibility of selecting the top honors in this year's exhibit. You'll also find a ballot box where you can participate in voicing your opinion, selecting the People's Choice Award. As we move through the exhibit, don't forget to cast your ballot. Let's begin by looking at the work of Megan Wynn, which is a large photograph of a woman and child. Listen now as the artist shares more information about the art. Welcome, Megan. To start, could you provide our listeners with some background on you and your work?
I'm a multidisciplinary artist, and I work primarily in photo and video now. But I have a background in painting and sculpture and photography and performance art and dance. Right now, I'm making work about the experience of being a mother, and it's been the most intense relationship of my life. And I've always made work about my experience in personal relationships and intimacy, and trying to untangle yourself. And motherhood has been amazing, because it's been the most intense experience of a relationship I've ever had. It's been what I've been working on since I was pregnant with my first child.
You've stated that you're interested in exploring the transgenerational legacy of the mother-child dynamic in your work. Can you tell us a little more about that?
By that, I mean, on one level, just the obvious influence of a mother's 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 mother, intergenerationally, from your mother to your children, those influences that can't be parsed out or fully understood, and the complexity of that, and how it affects how you mother, and how, and in some ways, you, a part of you is in your children, and it'll forever go on. And that is kind of frightening, too, because you can't fully understand where you end and where your mother and your children. And it's that same thing about trying to, like, untangle extreme levels of intimacy between people, and how it's kind of frightening at the same time. But it's very beautiful, too, when it goes right.
Your artistic process often involves collaborating with your two young daughters. Can you explain more about that process?
My work has always been collaborative, and it's about, you know, the work is about our relationship. So the process of making the work is like experiments and exercises in the act of living out our relationship, because I set parameters for the experiment, and you could say, and then I give them room to elaborate and how they want to make the work. And sometimes it goes in directions where I would never think it would go. But at the same time, that's what's thrilling for me about art. And it's putting myself in a kind of vulnerable position as an artist and a mother.
Tell us more about this piece, Double Rebirth.
Sure. It was made in the home where I grew up, in the foyer where I live with my children, where I'm raising my kids. That home being imbued with histories, my history and my mother's history, being that it's her home, and her past is influenced by how she created the home and what the home is and her history, in the foyer, in the entranceway. And we are reenacting the last moment that we were physically connected to each other right before she was delivered. That moment is a moment that mothers are constantly going back to in some respect, like trying to reconnect with that moment. Every time I hug her or kiss her, I'm kind of almost trying to relive that moment of being connected to her, that kind of physical connection where we were still kind of one, you know? And I think for the rest of her life, I'm going to try to, every time I hug her or kiss her, it's going to be like, okay, we were one at once, you know, and you're reminded of that, you know, every time. I loved that thing she was doing where she was pulling her hair out and her body looked kind of contorted, almost like a frog getting dissected or something, like laid out on the table. And it didn't look quite human. Her body doesn't look quite human. And there's something kind of transcendent or ecstatic or kind of almost, it's not really sure what's going on in her face, but there's something kind of almost like revelatory in her expression, this kind of almost detachment from the materiality of the world or something. I chose that image, and I've thought about it as, you know, I'm in the process of creating her, and with the image flipped, she is in the process of always creating me. You know, it's like I am being born from her.
How do you incorporate humor, specifically dark humor, into your work?
I think that humor is kind of one of the highest forms of art, because it allows us to, even if we can't understand the dark aspects of human nature or life or our complexity, we can always laugh at its absurdity. And it gives us a way to try to cope.
After looking at the work of Megan Wynn, head to your right and find the work with the large green circle that appears to be a head with orange lips and a dark triangular body with four arms. Artist Wade Mickley is no stranger to Mocha, having exhibited his work in our community gallery. Listen as he shares more about his work. Welcome, Wade. Could you provide our listeners with some background on you and your work?
I've always been focused on art, or considered an artist growing up. So in high school, I attended an art magnet school for From there, I went to Virginia Commonwealth, just studied fine art and then communication arts for about a year. And then I came home for a summer and actually got a full-time job with a friend of mine who started a screen printing business. And then an opportunity opened up at NASA Langley in Hampton, who I had no idea had an arts department, and applied to that and kind of got into graphic art, graphic design, where I do technical figures, branding, logo design, everything.
You incorporate a variety of found objects into your mixed media creations. Can you tell us about your artistic process?
It usually starts off as a sketch or maybe based on an item I find that inspires me. Yeah, I'll use the computer. I'll sketch it, take it into sometimes in the computer, and fairly precisely I'll lay it out, take a photograph, work with the colors, kind of dial it all in. Then I can start building it and see where that leads me.
Vinyl records appear frequently in your work. Could you discuss their significance?
Sure. I think with the records, I was attracted to, you know, the history, 45s. They just worked for a piece, and it just grew.
Where do you find the found objects you work with?
Even walking in the parking lot, I'm always looking on the ground. I pick up rusted bottle caps, screws, anything that catches my eye. The best stuff I find is when I'm outside.
What inspired this specific piece, Solitude?
I worked on Solitude and Feral at the same time, and Solitude is more of a maybe where I wanted to be, and I think the other one was more dealing with some anxiety at the time, so that was kind of a balance I was working on in my life, and you know, I think Solitude is what I was striving for, and it was just, I think they started off as sketches, and I was going to make them into screen prints, and I decided, and I cleaned them up and I made the prints and very precise, and I said I'm going to build these, and hadn't built anything that large or that involved. So
what would you hope the viewer takes from this work?
I would hope they would take the time to, you know, get up close and really look at the objects and maybe be surprised by how they're built or how they're put together. I'd hope they wouldn't just walk by it and not give it a second glance. Just bad or good, you know, I want, instead of just nothing, I think is what I would hope for. I just hope it evokes some kind of reaction.
From Wade Mickley's art, head to the right into the next room, where it appears a large tea party is mounted on the wall. Artist Sean Donlan is a graduate of Virginia Commonwealth University, a fellowship recipient at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, and was recently awarded Best in Show at 2016 Craft and Design Exhibition. In his artist statement, Donlan shares, quote, "We're surrounded daily by functional objects. Beauty everywhere is easily overlooked when it is hidden in plain view. My fascination with teapots began when I grasped the beauty in its simplicity. Being overwhelmed in this simplicity of an epiphany was breathtaking. It was never important to me until I realized what I had overlooked, until I considered teapots a canvas for artistic expression," end quote. Using a glass-blowing technique known as flameworking, Donlan creates teapots as sculptural objects, instilling it with personality beyond its mere function. Here, we see the objects mounted on the wall, which asks us to consider them from a new perspective. How has this installation changed your perception of the teapot form? Press pause and explore the work from different viewpoints. Then press play when you're ready to move on. Moving into the last space in New Waves, look for a large wooden work of art with what appear to be large white wires curling over top the wood. This is the work of John Rushkovich, titled How I See Thought, Large Thought. Notice how the white curving lines intertwine, how one is pierced by a thin wire with a weighted object dangling precariously from its end, and the mechanical clasping hands at the bottom that grasp and hold the wires tight. If we consider the title in relation to these individual elements, a story might unfold. What do you think the wires might symbolize, or the metal clasps? There's still more to see in MoCA's Art Lab, an interactive space designed for visitors of all ages. You may wish to pause this audio walk until you're on the other side of Art Lab. Press play when you're ready to continue into the next space, the community gallery, and then on to the permanent installation of the Dale Chihuly chandelier hanging in the Rodriguez Pavilion. As you step into MoCA's community gallery, consider the last time you saw an abandoned building. Did you ever wonder what it might look like inside or what you might find in those forgotten rooms? Imagine the eerie feeling that might overcome you as you glanced around the discarded remnants left behind, those tiny ghost-like traces of human activity scattered about. These derelict buildings, their stories, and the remains of human presence are what inspires photographer Jamie Betts. Whether exploring empty farmhouses, abandoned hospitals, and forgotten churches, Betts offers us a glimpse into these derelict time capsules, while also capturing the beauty of these decaying artifacts. Listen now as Betts shared more about this work. Welcome, Jamie. To start, could you provide our listeners with some background on you and your work?
Sure. I'm a self-employed photographer. I work and I'm from Richmond, Virginia. My interest in photography, I think, really started out west. I was lucky enough to vacation in Wyoming growing up my whole life from age 9 to 20. I was just fascinated with the landscapes and openness and just how quiet it was in Wyoming. So I really think my photography began more of as documenting my travels, hikes, trips, things like that. And it kind of has stuck with me in the sense of, you know, the abandoned work is kind of a documentary as well. I now specialize in fine art, editorial and commercial photography. The abandoned buildings are more really of a personal project and self-interest, more of a exploring to see what you can find and to document that.
How do you identify the structures that interest you?
The unique thing about living in Virginia is we have this wonderful rural community and it spreads out so much. I mean, I'm from Richmond, which is a capital of Virginia. It's a fairly decent sized city, but within 10 minutes we can be in the middle of the farmlands and even further out from that, it becomes even more rural. So it's very interesting to see what you find. It's also, all of these places obviously have some sort of history of why they are the way they are, but I like anything that's got, you know, some rust to it or anything that's decayed or falling apart.
What's it like when you enter these buildings?
When you enter them, each one is a little different. You know, the asylums are certainly creepy and they have their history. And so it's always fun to do a little research before you go into these places so you can have a little feel or sense of what you're seeing and experiencing. The homes, I think, are completely unique and are probably more frightening because half the time they're collapsing.
How much time do you spend in them?
I think that really just depends on the uniqueness of the place. Some of these asylums have 20 or 30 buildings on the property, so you could spend a week, you know, literally if you wanted to cover every square foot. But I've spent, you know, 8 to 9 hours in one location shooting, you know, on an asylum or something like that. If a house is very unique or has a lot of left behind furniture and things like that, we'll spend an hour or two in there.
There are three photos in this exhibition taken in the same house in Virginia. Do you have any interesting stories about that location?
This one house is amazing because it's off a major road in Virginia, and the house itself contained a nice organ in the attic and a bedroom with some interesting clothing that was left behind. So some locations really can give you a lot to photograph.
What would you like the viewer to take away from your work?
I think just, you know, some wonder or some interest in the images. Maybe I think a lot of these places are places that most people would drive by and not even notice. I think the details and the stories behind these places are so amazing that it really makes you think, you know, why everything was left in this one home or why is this completely empty or why is this building this way or why did this city go under. So I think just to raise awareness of the things around you, not necessarily doesn't have to be what you're interested in, but just to take notice in the things around you and things going on in the world.
There's an informal subculture of photographers around the world that photograph abandoned spaces. Is there a code or a set of rules that you all adhere to?
we like to document these spaces as we see them. We're not vandalism, you know, we're not artists that tag spots like that or anything like that. So, but yeah, there is definitely a community and they all like to voice their opinions, certainly on Instagram. And if you come to their city and go to one of their churches, if you geotag it, you're going to get a lot of grief on Instagram. So there is a lot of privacy now about what you're photographing and to not give up information.
While looking at each of these images, imagine what it might have been like when life filled these spaces. What were the sounds, the smells? Allow your mind to wonder about what might have been. But don't forget to return to the present and explore how Betts has captured the elegance of the decrepitude and loss of these extinct structures. Now, let's move on to the Rodriguez Pavilion to view the permanently installed chandelier by world-renowned glass artist Dale Chihuly. Suspended from the ceiling is a colorful chandelier that measures 14 feet tall by 8 feet wide. Look closely, and you'll see some 520 blown glass objects attached to an unseen metal frame called an armature. You might notice shapes that remind you of horns, split leaves, water drops, or goosenecks, the same names the artist uses to identify each piece in the chandelier. Notice how the shapes weave in and out, forming one large conical shape that stretches downward to a point barely above our heads. Even though most of the chandelier is made of glass, the final work weighs over 2,000 pounds. Originally titled Isola di San Giacomo in Palude Due, after a small Venetian island, this chandelier was also given the nickname End of the Day, referring to the practice of Venetian Renaissance glassblowers melting the day's scraps together to make one last work of art. In 1999, the Virginia Museum of Contemporary Art, then the Contemporary Art Center of Virginia, exhibited several cutting-edge glassblowers of our time, including Dale Chihuly. Inspired by the community's response to the exhibition and the dynamic work of Chihuly, the decision was made to not only purchase the piece, but to also build an extension to house the piece. Opening in 2003, the Rodriguez Pavilion, with its large windows and welcoming views of the exterior, housed the newly retitled chandelier. Now called Mille Colori, meaning a thousand colors, the suspended chandelier is bathed in light daily, mimicking the shapes in nature seen outside these windows. Please sit and enjoy the video playing here, which highlights the work of Dale Chihuly and the expertise of world-renowned glassblowers who helped to realize Chihuly's designs.